నమ ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణపృష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తితీర్థస్వామీనితి నామినే. శ్రీల భక్తితీర్థస్వామి మహారాజ్ కి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్ కేమ్ విత్ అ వెరీ స్పెషల్ మిషన్ to fulfill the prediction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that the Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world in every town and village. And so in this way we can see that Krishna actually sent Srila Prabhupada to accomplish that mission. And in order to assist Sri Srila Prabhupada, Sri Krishna also sent many devotees. And undoubtedly, His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj is one of them. To assist Srila Prabhupada, Krishna planted different devotees in different parts of the world, in different communities, in different societies, and they, when Srila Prabhupada went to America, they came forward to assist Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada himself admitted that quite a few times, that many of his disciples are not just ordinary living entities, sadhaka bhaktis. They are his eternal associates. Just as he came from the spiritual sky, these devotees also came from the spiritual sky. Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was born in Cleveland, Ohio, on this day in 1950. If he was here with us, he would have been 60 years old today. He was born in a not too well-to-do American-African family. But his parents were wonderful people, especially his mother. Maharaj often spoke about his mother very fondly. And we can see that what an important role she must have played in building up Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, grooming up Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. Although he was not born in a very well-to-do family, but one thing is very obvious, that he was, in his nature, in his way, in his taste, in his dealings, he was a very aristocratic person. He was extremely aristocratic in his own way. And he was not like other young boys of that time in that neighborhood. He was very serious, aloof from everything, and very determined about his objectives and missions. Even from his childhood, he displayed that characteristic. When other boys were getting involved in not so nice activities, Maharaj didn't get, although provocation was there, although opportunities were there, but Maharaj never allowed himself to be degraded. Another very significant thing about Maharaj's young days is that he had a problem. He had some speech defect. He used to stutter. So a stammer. And but this teacher in the school noticed one very amazing thing about him is that when it came to reading Bible, he didn't have any problem. Otherwise he had problems speaking, he had problem reading, he had to stutter. But while reading Bible, he could speak, he could read without any difficulty. So when he was telling me that, I could consider that here is a spiritual personality. He had difficulty to deal with the material nature, materialistic activities, but when it came to spiritual activities, he didn't have any difficulty at all. He was a very bright individual, a very bright student. And once Maharaj, I think he was just in his high school at that time, he used to give some tutorial, maybe to earn some money, or I don't exactly know why he was doing that, or just to help the not so literate individuals. And in that community that used to do that, the society that used to conduct that service, there was a white young girl from a very rich family. And she saw such a brilliant possibility in Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj that she actually made arrangements for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj to get admitted in the Hawkins School. It was a preparatory school which is meant for very, very rich children from very rich families. And she made arrangements for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj to get admitted in that school, a very prestigious school. And he came out with a brilliant academic result, and he got admitted to all the Ivy League colleges, scholarship for all the Ivy League colleges, including Harvard, Princeton, Stanford. He could join any of these colleges, the best colleges in America, best universities in America. And Maharaj decided to take his admission in Princeton. And Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning that he selected Princeton for two reasons. One was it was relatively close to Cleveland, and that college along with the scholarship provided him the free books and a free passage once a year during the vacation to his home. He could get a free flight, so that's why he selected Princeton. But afterwards he realized that Princeton was not the best school to go to, because Princeton was famous for its redneck attitude, redneckish attitude. Mostly the Southerners used to go to Princeton, and they had a very strong tendency. And Maharaj realized that, and that it was not the best selection that he made, because he had to face a lot of difficulties in the college, and sometimes people could even become quite violent, and probably they may have become violent also. And I had it from Radhanath Maharaj that Maharaj actually told him once that he used to carry a gun with him at that time, just for the sake of his safety. But in spite of all these difficulties and in spite of all these oppositions, he shone forth very, very brilliantly. He became very actively involved in the, not only in his studies, but also in his college social activities. He became very actively involved in Martin Luther King's civil rights movement at that time. And he became a member of the ABC Association of the Black Association of Black Collegians in Princeton. And he also founded a society called the Third World Center in Princeton. And then I think in the third year, he joined Princeton in 1968. And in 71, he actually became the president of the college students' union. So it's a brilliant achievement. Very, very brilliant person, like in his academic career, in his dealings. I mean, we can well imagine how he must have been. During that time. And in 72 he graduated from the university. And his original plan actually was to join the diplomatic service of the US government. That was his objective, and he was preparing himself for that. But then there was an unusual turn soon after he finished his college. He came across the Hare Krishna movement. And that was the end of his diplomatic career. Maharaj mentioned once how he first came to ISKCON. He went to a temple, I think it was in Manhattan Temple. And he just got some literature or got some flyers or leaflets, and on his way back from his office, out of curiosity, he came to the temple, and he was dressed in his suit and tie. So the devotees in the temple didn't take him that seriously or didn't show enough interest, so he was a little disappointed the way they treated him at first. But he became convinced about Srila Prabhupada's teaching. Like just reading one or two books of Srila Prabhupada. And he decided to join. Prabhupada gave him initiation in 1973 in Los Angeles. Named him Ghanashyam Das. It's a beautiful name. Ghanashyam. Krishna is Ghanashyam. His bodily complexion is like dark monsoon cloud. And it's Ghana means deep. This Krishna is Shyam Sundar. When that sham complexion becomes even more intensified, then it becomes Ghana Sham. So, and Maharaj was extremely committed to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Whoever knew Maharaj knew how intense he was. Whatever he took to, he was completely committed to that. He just completely one-track mind. He took up the mission of spreading or assisting Srila Prabhupada in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, and he committed himself fully to that. He recognized that the most important business is to distribute Prabhupada's books. When at those days, all the serious devotees were into distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada also made it clear to everybody that the service that would please him the most is distribution of his books. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj joined the library party. Now, library party was a very special kind of book distribution program those days. They used to go to the universities and colleges and used to take standing orders. Universities, colleges, libraries, various establishments like that. And they used to take standing order because books are coming out and Prabhupada had a plan to print so many, to present Krishna consciousness through so many books. And Prabhupada was constantly pumping out books. So these devotees in library party, they used to go to different institutions and used to take the standing order, meaning they would give the, they would sell the books that have already been printed and take a standing order that whenever a new book would come out, that they would be willing to take those books. And that was a very exciting program. I remember those days in India also they had this library party. And many devotees, they were traveling around, attending, going to different libraries and colleges and universities. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj became very actively involved first in America, but then guess where he decided to go. The biggest challenge anyone can ever actually accept. Decided to go behind the Iron Curtain, East European bloc, communist countries. Those days distributing books in those countries, even to go to those countries was difficult. What to speak of distributing books? And the risk was inconceivable because the possibility was like going to country, those countries, those were completely opposed to America, and those were, their whole thing was anti-American. And if an American was found involved in an activity which is not authorized, it would have been seen as spying, espionage work. And one can well imagine what the punishment in that case would have been. So, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj took that risk. And he went behind the Iron Curtain. And those days were, must have been extremely difficult. He didn't have any regular place to live. There was no temple. What to speak of temple? There was no association of devotees. There was nothing even remotely related to Krishna consciousness in those countries, those days. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madhava Shakhi Brinda Ki Jai. And for months together he had been engaged in those activities. Actually, Maharaj didn't speak much about those days but he used to write to Srila Prabhupada. I had the good fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada those days. Srila Prabhupada used to take his lunch and right after his lunch, when he was to sitting there, Prabhupada used to take lunch sitting on a seat, asana, like this. About, this is quite high. Prabhupada used to sit on an asana which was about 1 foot high, and there was a table, and prasadam was served on the table, and Prabhupada used to eat. And after eating, we used to give Prabhupada water to wash his hands and mouth, and then he would just sit there for quite some time. And we used to take out the Prabhupada's plates and tables, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to come and read out the letters to Srila Prabhupada, the letters that came to Srila Prabhupada. And the first letter that he would read those days were the letters from Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. And those letters were so full of amazing anecdotes of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada was so excited. Prabhupada used to say that his letters give him life. He wrote to Tamakrishna, he told Tamakrishna Maharaj to write to him. Actually, Prabhupada, meaning Prabhupada gave the dictation to Tamakrishna Maharaj that his letters give him life, give him life. And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj also used to write quite frequently. He didn't have any place to live. Oftentimes he would just sleep in the trains, just traveling from one place to another. For food, must have been so difficult, really. He was just surviving just bread and butter, and no cooked food for days together, weeks together. Such a sacrifice for his spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada also recognized his sacrifice. And Krishna also assisted him in his mission. There are so many amazing stories that he used to write. Like once, he was going to an university, and he could sense that he was being followed. And naturally, he was a big target for those spies, the KGBs. And because obviously he was not a Russian, because in Russia those days, I don't think there was any African-bodied person there, any African there. And if there was, there were so few that he would naturally attract everybody's attention. And he mentioned that, like, he was always a target of these KGBs. And so he was trying to avoid that person. He was just trying to turn quickly from one corner to another. Then he just saw the name of a professor on the door. So he just opened the door and entered in there. And he told that the professor was quite surprised to see him. And he told him that he had an appointment with the professor. The professor couldn't remember that. But he kept on insisting, "No, I had the appointment with." And now, another amazing thing is that this professor spoke English. In Russia, those days, hardly anyone would speak English. And this professor, by Krishna's arrangement, spoke English and turned out to be a very nice person, and finally said, "Why did you tell me what do you want to see me for? And then he started to speak about Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's books, Indian culture and all that. And finally the person not only appreciated his effort, but placed a standing order on behalf of the university. So, and Prabhupada recognized Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's contribution, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's dedication to his lotus feet. And when Prabhupada went to London in August of 1977, many devotees came to see Srila Prabhupada in London at that time. Bhaktitirtha Maharaj also came. Prabhupada was physically quite incapacitated at that time. He was quite sick. And he was so pleased to see Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. And he embraced Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. And he assured him that he would go back to Godhead. Prabhupada considered him to be a very, very special devotee. And he was a very special devotee. His service to Srila Prabhupada, his commitment to Krishna consciousness, his profound understanding of Krishna consciousness, his deep love for Sri Guru and Gauranga, just stands out in all respects. And his dealings with his devotees had always been very, very sweet. I remember the first time I met him, that was I think in 78. I met him in Calcutta temple. He just came, he was coming to Mayapur. And he stopped in Calcutta on the way to Mayapur. That's the first time I met him. That's the first time we met each other. And immediately I recognized him, he recognized me. And we embraced each other. And practically both of us simultaneously said that I heard so much about you. And this way I was fortunate to develop a friendship with him. And he always treated me with great affection. And I was proud to have such a wonderful personality who considered me to be his friend. He was actually so caring and so respectful, so affectionate to all his god brothers and god sisters. He's amazing. I mean, his dealings were amazing. He was always so respectful, so caring. Another incident I remember, in 1986, our movement was going through major difficulty. And I'm sorry, it was 1986. And one senior devotee, senior leader, one of the most senior leader of our movement at the time, was being judged in his absence. And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was not really his man as such. He was kind of, but he had respected him. But he stood up, and he just mentioned that, look, you have to wait till he comes here. Before you make any decision about him, you have to give him an opportunity to defend himself. Like you're making a judgment against him when he is not here. And he took such a strong stand on that principle that he stuck to it. And it distanced him from ISKCON leadership for some time, that just that one incident. Different people may look at it in a different way, but in my mind it was clear that he was actually standing on the principle. He was not dealing, he was not reacting with certain decision, but he was actually standing on the principle. And although he was, he distanced himself from ISKCON leadership, but I had the good fortune of maintaining a relationship with him. We used to communicate, not that often, but sometimes we used to speak. And he was happy carrying on in his mission. And he started to preach in Africa those days. And he got a tremendous success. He was actually coronated as a king of a tribe in a place called Wari in Nigeria. And this is how well he was received. And naturally people were very, very proud of him, because he was such a brilliant personality. Wherever he went in Africa, he got a tremendous recognition. I had the good fortune of working together with him in South Africa. I was involved in South Africa in 89, and then when Maharaj started to get involved in Africa, we invited him to come, and Maharaj came and we requested him to become a co-GPC of South Africa. Giriraj Maharaj, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj and I were the co-GBCs of South Africa, and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj became also the co-GBC. And we saw what an amazing preaching he was doing in that country. He was an extremely brilliant speaker. I remember in 1995, there was a World Religious Federation in Durban where he was a participant, where he was addressing, and he got his speech was so brilliant that he got a standing ovation for that. Bhagavat Maharaj, were you there at that time? That was in 95. And one MP, Member of Parliament from London, was there in that program. And he told me that he heard many speeches. He's a politician, he's a member of parliament in London, where there are so many brilliant speakers. He must be hearing speeches from leaders from all over the world. And he admitted that that's the best ever speech that he has heard. I forgot the name of that person. He is commonly known among the devotee community as Arjun Das. So this MP from UK, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, was left such deep impression in the minds of so many individuals. Whoever came across became so impressed. And he was so powerful, and he was so clear in his thoughts, in his mind. What he knew, what he is doing, and he just stuck to that. While we were in South Africa, often I would notice while I was working with him that he would have his day just packed, hardly any break from morning till night, one after another programs. And also in this respect, I must admit that he has some very, very wonderful organizers among his disciples. He used to actually direct them, but they used to follow his instructions to the point. Like I remember in South Africa, they lined up programs with him. The opportunities were there. The South Africa was just a new, blossoming new nation. And he met Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela was very impressed with him. Another politician, he was the minister of the Zulu kingdom, Mangosuthu Buthelezi. So often he would speak about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Whenever we met him, he would ask, "Where is Krishna Path?" That was Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Krishna Path. And he was such a impressive personality. At the same time, he was so composed. I remember another experience I had with Maharaj. We were driving from Durban to Newcastle to a program, and on the way Maharaj needed to use the toilet, and so we stopped in one place, practically in the middle of nowhere. It was just a restaurant sort of, and so we went there along with Maharaj, me and one of my disciples who was driving us, and Jagadananda Pandit, he was driving us, and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. So we went to that shop, or whatever it is, shop or restaurant, everything was there. And there was a lady behind the counter. So this disciple of mine approached her and asked whether they have a toilet. And her reply was, "Yes, we have, but not for you people." She was white. And in South Africa, there was such intense racial discrimination but all this is after South Africa became independent, apartheid was gone. But still, the mentality prevailed and said, "Yes, we have, but not for you people," meaning this toilet is meant only for the whites, not for blacks or browns or others. And this disciple of mine became quite agitated. He said, "How much does this place cost? I want to buy it right now." And kind of got into a big, somewhat verbal bout. But Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just pacified him. He said, "Look, don't waste your time. And that was Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. He would never waste his time into any undesirable activities. Srila Prabhupada held him with very, very high esteem and great affection. And he stayed loyal to Srila Prabhupada in all respects. How do we recognize Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's advanced situation as a pure devotee? The most important consideration in this respect is his total disregard for his physical condition. Like when his body was healthy, we saw like he would dance for hours together. His dress, his clothes would become soaked with his sweat, as if he just had a bath with his clothes on. He would just, no concern about becoming tired. Here is a person who never got tired. And that is what we actually often we miss when we go to Ratha Jatras. We miss Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's dances. We miss Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's classes. We miss Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's kirtan. Because he was just unique in whatever he did. About this body consciousness, I just remember one incident also. I was in Washington, D.C. and we just went one morning to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's center in D.C. and it was a Bhagavatam class. We kind of gave a joint class. But unfortunately, the verse that day happened to be a verse which kind of sort of gives a kind of discrimination on complexion, that the white, black and yellow or brown. And Bhagavatam, actually, I don't remember exactly in which canto that verse was. And after the class, many very weighty questions started to come. That why there is consideration of black to be, a darker complexion to be inferior. So, but at one point, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj listening, but at one point, he just flared up. He said, he just shouted, he just continuously, that is another thing about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, when you would get fired up, you would get really fiery. And he started to just make that point that if you think that you are black, then you are black. Krishna consciousness is not based on bodily designations. Krishna consciousness is pure spiritual understanding. The spirit soul is neither black or white. Those who are thinking that, those who are making those discriminations or being affected by that discrimination, they are in the bodily platform of life. And I think he gave a brilliant lecture on that in a very angry mood. Those who have seen Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj in that mood knows what it is like. Sometimes we experience that in our GBC meeting. He would take up some cause, and he would just reach his limit and he would flare up. And then you would see a brilliant fireworks. It was so amazing the way Bhaktivedanta Maharaj left. I mean, he was so full of life, so full of vitality. As I was saying, like, he would dance, and he would go on dancing for hours together. And he was such a beautiful dancer. We hear the dancing of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. And we could get a glimpse of that when Maharaj danced. And I remember that year, we just saw Maharaj in Toronto Rath Yatra, and after Toronto, I think there was Chicago Rath Yatra, and then it's just a matter of 2 weeks. And then it was Denver Rath Yatra. And in Toronto Rath Yatra, I remember Maharaj was dancing throughout. And it was summertime, like as I mentioned, like Maharaj was drenched, as if with his clothes he just had a dip in a pool of water and came out. And in Detroit, after his Rath Yatra, he became sick, and that's how we actually, all this treatment started, and we got to know that he got cancer. It was a shocking information to all of us. Now, how could it happen? Like, just 2 weeks back, he was so healthy and strong. I was not there in Chicago Rath Yatra, and I'm sure in the Chicago Rath Yatra also, he must have been dancing like that. But in Detroit, last time I mentioned Denver, not Denver, it was in Detroit. In Detroit, Maharaj became, they diagnosed that he got cancer. And Maharaj, anyway, those days we thought that, well, it's something very simple, because we heard melanoma cancer is a skin cancer, it's not very, very dangerous. That, at least that's how I felt. Because sometimes I was told, Jai Shri Radha Madhava Ki Jai, that melanoma cancer is the cancer of the skin. So many people have this skin cancer. So it's nothing serious. So when I heard that Maharaj had melanoma cancer, I thought that, well, it's nothing serious. And then rapidly Maharaj's condition started to deteriorate. And then he became bedridden. When he became bedridden, I was hesitating to phone, but I remember the first time I phoned him, I thought I'll ask his secretary or whoever would answer the phone how Maharaj was. And when they found out that I was phoning, they immediately connected to Maharaj. And I was not really expecting that, because I thought that at a condition like this, probably we shouldn't trouble him. But when Maharaj started to speak, I couldn't believe the way he was speaking. His voice, his way of speaking was just like a perfectly healthy person. And whenever I spoke to Maharaj over the phone, it was always like that. Like, if I didn't know that he was sick, he was so seriously ill, I could never even believe that from his voice that something is wrong with him. He was totally unaffected by his physical condition. We speak about transcending the bodily platform. Prabhupada put so much emphasis on that point, that we have to transcend our bodily platform. We are not this body, we are spirit soul. And through Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj we could literally perceive that how one transcends the bodily platform and comes to the pure spiritual identity. We have the good fortune of seeing Srila Prabhupada in that state. And then we saw how Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, completely unaffected by his physical condition. Then at one point his one leg was amputated. Even then he was not affected. Even then he danced. Just about a week before Maharaj left the planet, I went to see him in Gitanagar. Radhanath Maharaj also was there. That's one thing with Radhanath Maharaj, he is so genuine, his love for the devotees, his love for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Maharaj actually went to America. His whole schedule was made, but he dropped everything, and for weeks together, 6 weeks I think, Maharaj just stayed with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, taking care of him, giving him association. And they used to spend time together. A friend in need is a friend indeed. So Radhanath Maharaj has demonstrated how he is, how genuine a friend he is. He dropped everything, stayed with Maharaj all the time. At that time Maharaj needed it. Why Maharaj stayed? Because Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj requested him to stay. He wanted someone to be with, a god brother, close friend. And I went to see Maharaj. That's the first time I saw him after his leg was amputated. He looked absolutely normal. His face has the same radiance. He had that same smile in his face, as if nothing happened. So we spent some time together talking. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj and myself, we sat and talked for a long time. Then Maharaj asked us to go and take prasad. So we went and took prasad. When I came back, I found Maharaj is giving dictations to his secretary, answering his letters. Even at that time, just about a week before he left his body, he's still answering the letters that devotees wrote to him. And it was not just some formal 2-3 lines letter, he was probing deep. The questions that they asked, he was just answering them with all sincerity and profundity. He is indeed a personality who came from the spiritual sky. It is not just a sentimental statement. It is not just a blind statement. His actions prove that. From his childhood all the way to his disappearance past times, he has perfectly demonstrated that he was a Nitya Siddha associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we are fortunate to have such an exalted personality in our midst. This good fortune had been created for us by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada came from the spiritual sky, and along with him from the spiritual sky, he brought these individuals. And through them, we get to understand what a pure devotee actually means. A pure devotee means a personality who is completely committed to Krishna. He has no other interest. His only consideration is how to serve Krishna, how to serve his spiritual master. And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj demonstrated that in the most wonderful way. In a day like this, while lamenting for our misfortune of being deprived of his association, we at the same time rejoice that we had the good fortune of coming across such a personality. And let us make his examples as the guiding factor for our spiritual progress. Let us try to follow the examples that he so wonderfully established, and then we'll positively also make spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada came to pave the way back to the spiritual sky for us. To become a devotee of Krishna is not difficult, but there is a certain process that we have to adapt, that we have to practice. So it's a matter of sincerely accepting that process and wholeheartedly pursue that. That is why we are so grateful to His Divine Grace, Bhaktitirtha Swami Maharaj. His Divine Grace, Bhaktitirtha Swami Maharaj ki, Srila Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's Vyas Puja Mahotsav ki, His Divine Grace, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's Appearance Day celebration ki.